Hey there. You're listening to What the Fricative Podcast. If you're looking for an SLP podcast that is raw, unfiltered, and authentic, you've come to the right place. Join us as we chat about grad school survival, daily struggles, and successes of an SLP, and stories from all of you. You'll be sure to laugh, learn, and maybe even cry, but that's okay. We're here to support each other through it all. And now, here is your host, Sam, from Speaking of Semantics.
Welcome to What the Fricative Podcast, where we discuss all things speech pathology. I'm your host, Sam, and thank you so much for tuning into our podcast episode. Today, we'll be talking about surviving grad school, research, and learning how to balance work and life with our special guest. We're so excited to have Justina, a speech-language pathologist who focused her clinical and research studies in graduate school on diagnosing and treating adults with acquired brain injuries. Hello, Justina, and thank you for joining us today.
Hello, I'm so excited to be here.
Is this your first podcast?
Yes.
Yay. I'm so happy that I'm so many people's first podcast. I'm like, this is a good way to go. We're just having a conversation here. So just to start out, can you tell the listeners and me a little bit about yourself outside of the world of speech pathology?
Yeah. So outside of being an SLP, I really enjoy reading. I love cooking, serving in my church, and traveling with my friends and family. And I also love taking road trips with my friends around Texas.
Woohoo! I've never been to Texas.
Really?
Never. And it's funny because my boyfriend and his family are big cowboy fans. Oh. Huge. Which is funny because I'm like, you live in New York.
Yeah. Well, I feel like there's, I don't want to be controversial, but there's a better team out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I just kind of have to go with the flow, or I may be unapproved. No, just kidding.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of experience with grad school and a kind of unique experience. And it's interesting to talk about different people's experience with grad school, because although it's kind of like a universal thing, we all experience different things while we are tortured, for lack of a better word, mm-hmm. in SLP grad school. So before grad school, how did you know you wanted to become an SLP?
So I didn't always know I wanted to be an SLP. I initially kind of wanted to be a teacher just because I loved working with kids, and I didn't really know what a speech pathologist does. And then one day I observed one in a pre-K, and I just loved how they were able to just be a little bit more one-on-one with the kids and make a smaller and bigger impact on the child in a way. And so I kind of just fell in love with that. And at that point, I didn't know about the medical adult side of being a speech pathologist. And so I just kind of decided, like, this is what I'm going to do. I love kids. I love helping people. So this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah, that's usually a lot of people's first reaction. Like, oh, I want to work with kids. And then once you go into grad school, it's like a whole different world mm-hmm. about all these different medical and adult type things.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about your application process and taking the GRE and how that went?
Yeah. So my kind of story into grad school is a little bit different. I actually did a fast track program at the University of Texas at Dallas. It was just something that I knew if I got into UTD, that was my dream. And so I only applied there, and I kind of knew once I hit 90 hours that I would have to take the GRE and apply. And it was a very stressful time. I don't think people really talk about how stressful it is. Like, your whole career, it feels like, is dependent on this one test. And it was seriously by the grace of God that I got the score that I needed for the GRE, because it was so difficult for me. And I studied a lot and I felt like I was prepared, but then I got to the test and it was like, I forgot everything. And yeah. So I took the GRE, and, you know, thank God I got the score that I needed. And it was really just a form that I needed to fill out and go and talk to the dean. And I was like, hey, I got the score that y'all needed. I have my GPA, and here's my application. And what I did was I actually went to the program head prior to applying. I kind of met with him twice, I think, before I submitted my application, because my advisor at that time had told me it's a good thing if you go in and let them see your face so that when they see your application come in front of them, they're like, oh, I know who Justina is. She's come in and talked to me before. And so that's kind of what I had done. And so when I came in with all the paperwork, he kind of just looked at me and he was like, okay, when do you want to sign up for classes? And I was like, what? Am I in? You know? And so it was kind of, to him, I think it was just kind of like, oh yeah, you're in. But to me, it was like, I got into grad school. Right. And so that was kind of my journey into getting into it. And I also started, I applied and got in my sophomore year of college. So it was, you know, I didn't know what I was getting into, essentially.
Yeah. And I really appreciate how you said that no one really talks about the GRE, because, you know, the more followers I get on Instagram, I realize I'm getting like an influx of undergraduate students, and they message me and almost, like, for lack of a better term, sound desperate for tips on how to pass the GRE. And I feel so lost trying to guide them because I don't even know how I passed the GRE.
Yeah.
I'm like, I really don't know what kind of advice I can give them, because honestly, like you said, like I kind of walked into that test and I'm just like, in my head, I knew I was going to probably have to take this test four or five times before I got the grade that I wanted. And luckily I just was able to get the grade on the first try, but by total shock to myself,
right?
Because math is not my strong suit. And honestly, I'm happy, you know, I'm not happy that this pandemic happened, but I'm also kind of happy that it's kind of making grad schools realize how unimportant the GRE and how much it doesn't say anything about people applying to become speech pathologists. But you're right, there's not much out there. Everyone is just kind of like, good luck.
Yeah. And that was what really scared me when I first decided, okay, I'm gonna do this. And I was actually traveling that whole summer prior to taking it, which I don't know if that was the best decision to make, but I would get up early before my family did and I would sit there and I would study. And like during that test, during that 10 minute break, I like sat and cried. I was like, this, I'm taking this again. Like I was for sure. So whenever people ask me like, what did you study? You know, I tell them this is what I studied, but I don't really think it was why I passed. I really don't.
Right. And also it's like when people don't get accepted into graduate school initially, like their first try, a lot of people take the GRE again and again and again to get that perfect score. And in my head, I'm like, Warren, that's a waste of money because they're just throwing money at these test companies. And two, it's just like, what is that going to say about them as an SLP? I'd rather, if I were applying to graduate school again, I'd rather you sit me in a room with five people and me have to talk to them than for me to take this standardized test that tells me nothing about myself.
Right. So do a lot of the grad schools now not require it anymore?
Some of them aren't, because it was hard for people to take the GRE during the pandemic. And then now it's some of it's online. But a decent amount of them don't take it anymore. And I don't know if that's going to change whenever this pandemic goes away, or if that's something that they're going to realize that, you know, they're going to keep. But I mean, I think it's a good idea because standardized tests in general aren't like indicative of anything. And especially for people who have test anxiety, you know, people who don't have access to tutoring. Tutoring is expensive for the GRE. The GRE book in general is expensive. And some people just don't have access to that.
Right. They are. And I was honestly looking for some of the cheapest options because like when I was studying for the SAT, I bought so many books and I did Karen Dillard, which I don't know if Karen Dillard is something national, but it is in Dallas. And I mean, it was a few thousand dollars to go into a school like that and have them prep you. And I was like, I'm not doing anything like that for the GRE. It's just with tuition and, you know, all the other expenses, like we can't afford all of that.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I hope it goes away soon. But I mean, your story, I've never heard of a fast track. Can you describe a little bit about what the fast track is?
Yeah. So at UTD, they allow students to apply to grad school once they hit 90 hours of undergraduate credit. So since I came in with a few hours from high school, it was kind of going to be a thing where I was going to have to stay an extra semester just for 2 or 3 hours. So I just kind of added an extra class or two, for a few semesters. And then once I hit the 90 hours, they were like, okay, before the semester that you hit your 90 hours, you need to take the GRE and submit an application by a certain date. And then you will do essentially 2 semesters of grad school while you're in undergrad. And those credits will essentially be your elective hours. So that's essentially what I did. I had a bunch of extra credits that were electives, and I used my grad school hours for those. So I got credit for both my graduate degree and my undergraduate degree.
That is crazy. So after your 4 years, did you just stay a fifth year to get your master's degree?
So it's actually kind of crazy, but I did both in 3.5 years. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. You need to tell us about your grad school experience, because I need to know if you were drowning, because I did it. I did like the regular track, like 2 years after my undergrad, and I was drowning. So I can only imagine how you felt.
Yeah. So let me kind of start from the beginning. So I came in with 36 hours from high school of college credit. So I knew that when I hit 90 hours, it was going to be my second semester of, or I was going to hit 90 hours my first semester of my sophomore year. So my first semester of sophomore year, that August, I took the GRE. I applied, and then I finished my undergraduate degree August of 2020. So I started grad school in January of 2020. That was my first semester. And then my program was 5 semesters. So I did 2 in undergrad, and then I did the 3 after I graduated in August 2020. And to say I was drowning is probably an understatement. I mean, for me, undergraduate wasn't as difficult as I anticipated it to be. And I don't know if it was just because of the way I organized my classes, but it wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be. It was a lot of time management, but I felt like it was more manageable. When I got to grad school my first semester, I remember I was finishing my undergrad classes. I was in 6 hours of grad school. I had my practicum, and then I was an officer in the undergraduate NISLA. And then I was also an officer for an Orthodox Christian campus ministry organization. And then on top of all of that, I was an RA. And so,
oh my God.
Yeah. So I quickly realized I can't do all of this. And then the grad classes were a lot different than I anticipated. And they were nothing like my undergraduate classes. I mean, these professors were just like, the hour and 15 minutes of class was jam-packed with information you had never really heard of. Like, it was so detailed and it was just so in-depth. And then plus a practicum where you're no longer observing, you are the clinician. Right. Which no one told me that I'm going to be the clinician providing therapy. I never worked with toddlers. I don't think I'd ever even taken a class where they had taught me how to develop a treatment plan for a toddler who had delayed language. So I just felt like I was sinking, and it was like I was just trying to grab on something to survive. And if it wasn't for the pandemic, I don't know if I would have been able to give 100% to everything I had done or that I was doing then.
Right, because at some point you were just like home doing everything, right?
Yeah. So I remember telling my mom this, like end of February of 2020, I was like, Mom, like, this is too much. Like, I don't have time to study. I don't have time to do anything, you know, between my extracurriculars and my job and driving to Dallas for classes and back. Like, I'm so tired. I didn't have any time for myself. And when the pandemic happened, I mean, all the extra stuff went away and it was just classes online.
So, and clinic online, right?
Yeah, well, since we were with toddlers, they couldn't do it online for the kiddos. So we ended up just, that was it. And our program started SimuCase.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Those letters put together still gives me nightmares.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I was like looking through my hours for a program that I'm applying to, and I saw SimuCase, and I'm like, I feel like that was so long ago, but it was It was so bad.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I had to do that too. I wonder if that's like a national thing that all grad schools do, but they often do that like when they're running out of hours. But girl, talk about plate full. Like, I think that you had a bowl full. Like, I don't even know, like everything. So the pandemic was almost like a blessing in disguise for you. Like, how do you feel like the pandemic impacted your studies?
So I know this is not the case for everybody, and most people that I did, you know, a lot of my friends, this wasn't the case for them, but I really loved it being online. And I only say that because So I was living on campus because I was an RA, and our classes were in downtown Dallas, which was a good like 45 minutes. And that's without traffic. So I would finish my practicum, which was on the Richardson campus. And then I would drive down there. I would sit in class. I was already exhausted. And then I would have to drive back to, you know, do whatever I need to do in that evening. And so I was just exhausted. I couldn't focus in class, and I would have to literally listen to lectures again at night or before I need, you know, before I had a test. And so I loved it when it was online. I loved how the professors recorded everything. I loved how I could go back and listen to it. I loved that I was just in the comfort of my home, and I could take the notes that I needed, and I could feel relaxed, and the pressure of grades was no longer there because our program was very kind and they let us use our notes for the tests. And so I didn't feel like, oh my gosh, if I don't, like, you know, if I don't know something, like, that's it. And like, I'm going to do horrible. It was like, okay, I'm going to study as if my test is in person. And if I forget something or if I need to go back, I can. And so I loved it, but there was also the downside of, I didn't have, you know, a lot of friends in grad school because I wasn't seeing anybody. Right. And because a lot of our practicum experiences, it was just one person, or if it was more than one person, it was just one or two other people, and they were not in the same necessarily track as you were.
Yeah. It sounds like that's pretty isolating.
Yeah.
But I love being online. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love being in the comfort of my own home. And, you know, especially for grad school, I feel like it gives you a lot more flexibility. But I guess this is also a good segue to kind of, you know, had the pandemic not hit, I feel like your body at some point would have been like, girl, you need to stop. You know, we often think that we can go, 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 go until our body kind of says, like, it starts to shut down. Like, no, this is not going to happen. So do you feel like your mental health was impacted in grad school?
I think so. I would say, like, I made myself physically sick one day. It was the night before. It was a week of my first two exams in grad school. They were the same week. Actually, they were the same day. They were back to back. And I was so stressed. And it was a Monday night. I remember we had a staff meeting, and I was just like, I was sick. My symptoms just started developing. And I don't know if it was the stress or if it was just, you know, this is my first test. If I don't do good, like, this is going to determine the rest of my program, which I don't know why I was thinking like that, but I made myself sick, and I couldn't even go to practicum the next morning. I like texted my supervisor, and I was like, hey, like, I feel really sick and I don't know what I have. But I mean, after I took my exams, it was like, by the end of the day, my symptoms were gone. And I was like, I literally made myself sick. And then, of course, after we went online, I remember summer of 2020, that was the first full online semester. It was the hardest, I think, time that I really ever went through, because not only were we now completely isolated, but it's like, you still have to perform. Like, you mm-hmm. still have to show up for your patients. And I remember that was my first adult practicum. And I had to wake up and I had to be like, hey, like, good morning. Like, we're going to do this, this, and this. And then I had research before my 1 p.m. class, and I had class from like 1 to 4:45. And then we had tests every week. And it was like, and not only that, you're not seeing anyone, you're not talking to anyone besides your family, if you're living with your family. And it really took a toll on me. And I was just, I think the pandemic really changed me. And like, I used to be so outgoing. I used to love going out with people. And then I just became like super sensitive, I feel. And not that there's anything wrong with being sensitive, but I think I just became a little bit more, I know I kind of would prefer to be alone, but yeah. I have to convince myself, like, no, you need to go see your friends. Your friends want to see you. Like, you've got to go do it.
Yeah. I think that happened to a lot of people, because that happened to me too. I was always someone who liked to go out, but I just feel like there's just so much fear nowadays where I just like, don't know about the pandemic, about going out. Like, I just so much rather be home. But, you know, I think what a lot of people don't talk about as far as graduate school is the kind of toxic environment it is, and not any specific grad school, like maybe not my school, not your school, but just in general. I think the environment of graduate school for speech pathology can feel toxic at times, because we're kind of like bred or taught to always be on, to always give 100%. That, although, you know, you're trying to impress everyone, you're trying to get good grades and all of that, I feel like no one in grad school ever tells us to slow down. You'll get a professor here and there, you'll get a supervisor here and there who will kind of like realize that you're like pushing yourself too hard, but it's constant go, go, go. And I think that that's why graduate students who start their clinical fellowship or right after their clinical fellowship get so burnt out, because it's like, you never kind of stop yourself and say, okay, I'm no longer in grad school. I don't have to do this constant go, go, go. I don't have to say yes to everything. I don't have to constantly impress people. And I think that that's why burnout happens so fast in the world of speech pathology.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I felt like I couldn't like just take a break. I felt like if I had extra time, then I should have been doing something else. I could have been developing, you know, a treatment plan, or I could have been doing some more research, or I could have been reaching out to a professor. And it's like, why? Why?
Yeah. And I think that even starts maybe before graduate school, the fact that we are maybe not in your case, but everywhere you see and everywhere you hear about SLP grad school, you hear about how competitive it is, mm-hmm. how hard it is to get in. So it's that constant need to want to be the best, that it's hard to kind of turn that off.
Yeah.
So as someone who survived graduate school, which is a big accomplishment, what do you feel like is like key in surviving?
I think a few things, but I would say the first one is taking time for yourself, because if you don't take time for yourself, you're not going to be able to be the best clinician that you can for your patients or your kids or your clients. And I think that's a really hard thing for a lot of us to kind of take in, because we're like, no, like there's this pressure. But I really had to like sit with myself and say, okay, Wednesday nights I'm gonna watch The Bachelor with my friends, and Sunday nights they're gonna be for my family. I'm gonna hang out with them and I'm gonna enjoy hanging out with them before I go back to school. And that was something that I really had to implement, and I felt so much better. Like I was like, okay, I'm taking care of myself, I'm doing things that I enjoy and that I love. And I didn't feel like, oh, I can't do this anymore. It was like, yeah, I'm looking forward to that Wednesday night, or I'm looking forward to that Sunday night. And that was one of the things that really helped me kind of be like, yeah, I can do this.
I tell graduate students that all the time. I'm like, you have to take time for yourself. And I know, trust me, I know it's a lot easier said than done, because if you had a time machine and went back to me in graduate school, I was that like girl at her desk who never left, who was studying for tests weeks in advance because I just submersed myself in graduate school. But like you said, you know, without that time for yourself, you know, you're going to hit rock bottom way, way faster and harder than you would if you were giving yourself time. And I think the only way to make time for yourself like that is if you schedule it in, like if it was a class. And I say this to everyone, I'm like, my schedule in grad school had to literally be wake up in the morning, and on Mondays, you're going to go get Starbucks because you know that makes you happy. Mm-hmm. And on Fridays, you're going to end work at 6 o'clock, or end, you know, doing work at 6 o'clock, and you're going to binge watch Grey's Anatomy. And I literally had that in my schedule because I was following my schedule. That's what that's what I know how to do. That's what I'm good at, you know? And once I was able to kind of like follow that schedule, I knew at 6 o'clock on Fridays, I had gotten everything that I need to get done. You know, I don't have to do extra stuff. Without that time schedule for myself, of course I would find something to do. My friends used to text me and they're like, you want to go out to eat? And I'm like, no, I'm studying for anatomy. And they're like, but we don't have a test for another 4 weeks. And I'm like, but I need to study. Like, I was crazy. I was literally crazy in grad school. And it's just not necessary.
That's funny that you say that, because I'm one of those people. I would study weeks in advance. And I don't know. I didn't know anyone else who did that. But like, seriously, I look back on that and I'm like, did I really need to do that? Because I know I had one final. It was Thanksgiving of last year, I think. And my mom was going to visit my sister for Thanksgiving because she couldn't make it back. And they wanted me to come. And I was like, no, I have to study for my exam. And my exam was like 2.5 weeks later. And like, looking back on that, I'm just like, why? Like, why did I feel like I couldn't enjoy myself for like 3-4 days and, you know, go to Florida and see my sister? And so
it's like that constant pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think too that our cohorts, I mean, it may not have been so much for you, but cohorts in general sometimes can be so competitive. So in addition to the grad school in general, being the grad school world being competitive, you know, you have cohorts or, you know, classmates that can be competitive. So it's always that constant want to be good, to be the best, you know? But I was someone who, I'm not naturally smart. I gotta work my ass off to be smart.
Yeah.
I seriously do.
Yeah. So did I.
You know, and I'm not afraid to say that because I feel like there's so many other people out there who don't hear that point of view often.
Yeah.
I am so type B. I'm the most unorganized person in the world, but it happens. I'm an SLP. It's okay to be like that.
Yeah.
So do you feel like there were any specific challenges that you faced as a graduate student clinician?
Besides the pandemic?
Yeah.
Challenges in grad school.
Like, for example, like in grad school, I took everything personally. And I think that was hard. It was hard to be like that in grad school because in grad school, you are often, if not always, told to fix something,
yes.
Whether it's an assignment, whether it's your supervisor, it's always because you're learning and, you know, that is how it should be.
Mm-hmm.
But I took everything to heart. I mean, the red marks on my paper, I'm like, that's it. I'm never going to be a speech pathologist. I'm failing. Like, so I was so dramatic.
I would just say that it was such a humbling experience. And I think being a speech pathologist is a humbling experience because you are constantly, like you said, being told, oh, you could have done it this way, or, you know, change this, or next time do this. And every time you feel like you got this, it's like someone's telling you, oh, well, you know, maybe you can improve in this area or whatever. I just had to accept criticism and just say, okay, they're doing this because they want me to be better, and just learn that it's okay. It's okay if you're every day you're being humbled. Like, that's okay. That's part of being a therapist, I guess. But besides that, I just think the biggest challenge was feeling like when I graduate, you know, what if I did grad school wrong? That was always kind of in the back of my mind. Like, what if I didn't do this one experience that I could have done, and that would have been the key to a clinical fellowship or a job in the future? And that was something, especially now that I've graduated and am applying to clinical fellowship programs around the country, like the medical-based ones, I'm kind of thinking now, it's like, well, what if I just pushed myself to take an extra practicum? What if I just pushed myself to just get out of my comfort zone and advocate more for myself and say, no, this is the practicum that I want? You know, would I have different experiences, and would that have made me a better candidate? And, you know, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that because I'm still in the application process, but that was something I think it was more of a mental block of how do I just be in the moment and enjoy the placement that I'm in and just believe like it's all going to work out.
Yeah. I think that we are our worst enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, you know, it's important to realize that not all your thoughts are true.
Yeah.
Even though you're thinking them, it might not be true. We can easily convince ourselves of things that aren't true. So it's hard. But can you tell us a little bit about your research experience?
So I did two research experiences. I did the first one for about a year and a half, and it was part of the family research lab. And essentially we recruited 100 to 120 families and gave them a video camera and told them, hey, record yourself at dinner. And we would watch those videos and analyze the relationships between the parents and the relationship between the parents and their child. And we were looking at 3 to 5 year olds because parents had told us that the most difficult part of their day was getting their kid to sit down and eat. So we were just looking at how did they act in those situations? How were their behaviors? How were their positive and negative responses? And so I did that for about a year and a half. And it was interesting, but it wasn't like my jam. And then this past semester, so my last semester of grad school, I joined the speech, language, and music lab at the Collier Center. And they had a really interesting project. They were testing the hypothesis of whether rhythm alone would be sufficient enough to facilitate language recovery without melody in non-fluent aphasic patients. And that was really cool for me because when I heard non-fluent aphasic patients or participants, I was like, yes, you know, I love neurogenic communication disorders. And I was like, yes, you know, I want to be a part of this. And so it was really cool because the team developed an app and they gave the app to the participants, and we administered a bunch of assessments, you know, when they first came in prior to them seeing that app or using it. And then after 8 weeks of them using it at home, we brought them back and we administered all of those assessments again. And then we looked at the data to see if their language had improved. And that was just our feasibility study. And I think they're in the process of analyzing all that data and then launching the clinical trial. But it was really interesting because some people who came back, you could see very clearly that their language had improved. And a few others, not so much, but there was still improvement, which was so interesting. And so I loved being part of research. I thought it was always really interesting. And I love kind of developing and learning new things. So it was really exciting. And I always tell, you know, my friends and people who ask me, I'm like, do it, like, just try it out. And if you love it, you love it. If you don't, then, you know, you got the experience, you learned something. Right. And it also builds great relationships, I think.
And that's the great part about speech pathology, that you can experiment with so many different types of things. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get bored, you know. Yeah. As long as you're opening to kind of making yourself, you know, feel uncomfortable in situations that you're not used to. But that's the beauty of speech pathology, because we are completely different. And I got a C in research and I never want to look at research ever or do it. Yeah. But, you know, it's amazing that you got those experiences. And I feel like those experiences will, one, really kind of help you mend into the speech pathologist that you're becoming. But also too, like, you got to meet different people. You got to meet people with different type of communication difficulties, communication effectiveness, right? And learning that experience in person and being involved in it, I'm sure was so much different than learning about it in school.
Yeah, it really was. And then I could kind of take that information I'd learned in school and apply it to here. And that
Exactly. Yeah, that's awesome. So going back to grad school, what's one major takeaway or advice that you'd give to future students, or maybe even just like your first semester you? I feel like, I'm sure that sounds like forever ago.
I know, even though it wasn't, but I would say, don't be scared of trying something that scares you. And that sounds kind of weird, but really, like, I was terrified of doing a medical internship. Terrified. I mean, I joined the information meeting twice in two different semesters. The first time I joined it, I was like, no, I'm not doing this. This is too scary. And then after I did that first adult practicum, I was like, wait, maybe. And then I joined it again. And I was like, look, that still scares me. I don't know if I'm going to love it. I might hate it. And what if, like, you know, I start treating patients with dysphagia and I can't do it, or I don't know. And I just kind of told myself, you know what, if you hate it, you hate it. It's 3 to 4 months of your life. You would have learned something. And then that's it. You know that you don't love it. But I'm so glad that I did, because if I hadn't done it, then I wouldn't have known that this is what I want to do and this is what I'm interested in. And so I'm so glad that even though it scared me and I was worried I wouldn't be successful, I did it anyway, because, you know, I wouldn't be pursuing what I'm pursuing right now if I hadn't taken that chance. So I just would encourage, you know, all the clinicians that are in grad school or who want to be in grad school, take grad school as an opportunity to do everything that you can. And, you know, you're not going to ever get another chance to where you can do something for 3 months and then move on to the next thing. And so that's just something that I wish I would have told myself early on. And I think it would have maybe shaped my practicum experience a little bit differently.
I think that's amazing advice, because sometimes graduate students go into grad school knowing exactly what they want to work with. I want to work with kids, or I want to work with adults. And then they often like turn a cold shoulder to the opposite practicum that they want. And it's hard, because, you know, they go into those types of practicums maybe being like having negative thoughts about it. Yeah. But grad school is a learning experience. Mm-hmm. Grad school, like you said, is the best place to experiment. You, after graduate school, you'll never be a student again. And, you know, in the world of speech pathology, like, that's not talking about like PhDs and all, and like, you know, other degrees, but that's your excuse to say, you know, you can always fall back on the fact that, hey, I'm a student, I'm still learning, I don't know that yet. And I think that's what makes sometimes these practicums so scary, is because we often are fearful of the unknown. Well, what if this happens? Well, what if I don't know this? What if the patient chokes? And what if the client doesn't make any goals, right? Mm-hmm. And that unknown is always going to be there. So worrying about it is kind of taking away from your experience or the things that you'll learn. But also too, it's like, you may not like the practicum, but these are patients you probably will never forget.
Yeah.
I think about my first patients and I'm like, I still love them. Like from graduate school, I can, I know what they look like. I know what they sound like, everything. Like I remember them.
Yeah. That's literally how I felt about the, my first adult practicum. I remember I met with the head of the program and when he told me that I have to do an adult practicum, in my head, I was like, oh my goodness, no, like I can't. Like, I was like, there's no way. And like, if I hadn't been open to that, then I wouldn't have been like, oh yeah, like I love this. So it's just kind of when you do open, when you open yourself for those opportunities. And I seriously, those patients, I remember their stories. I remember all the, you know, cool things that we talked about, all the advice they gave me. And like, seriously, I will always keep them in my heart because those were some of the best experiences I did have in grad school.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Justina, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Can you let everyone know where to follow you, where to find you?
Yeah. So I am on Instagram, just my name, Justina Gawley. I also have a Facebook, but I don't really use it that much. And then, yeah, that's about it. But I have had so much fun and thank you for inviting me on here. It was.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. Well, this brings us to the end of our episode. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we'll see you next time on the next episode of the What the Fricative Podcast.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of What the Fricative Podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We appreciate that effort as it helps others find the show. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.